A couple of weeks ago, when we spoke about bat mitzvah, somebody raised the question about, one of the considerations there was this problem called chukot akum, following the practices of non-Jews, and if you recall, that was a subtext to a whole part of the discussion. So somebody then made the request, can we go into this a little bit more in depth? So I am hereby acquiescing, but I decided to try to at least connect it somewhat with our upcoming holiday, and that's Chag Shavuot, which is next week, which is why we won't have class next Thursday. And then the following week will be the last class of the semester. So if there's any specific requests, you can email me. Maybe I'll ignore it, but you can at least make requests. I give no guarantees that I will fulfill it, but I'll consider it. We find in the Shulchan Aruch, source number one, a very nice custom. It's written by the Ramah. He writes, V'noagin l'shtoach asavim b'shuot b'batei ha'kneset v'habatim zecher l'simchat matan Torah. There's a custom to put, what does the word asavim mean to you?
Greenery.
Foliage. Foliage. Or, if you want flower, grasses is literally, but most likely he means flowers or something green. In the shuls, bebatei hakneset v'habatim, and in the homes, zecher l'simchat matan Torah, as some kind of a memorial for what happened by matan Torah. And matan Torah, there are various midrashim about the entire area suddenly turning green, and so on and so forth.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Already?
Is there, yeah.
Can we put the air conditioner on?
As long as he doesn't put the camera on.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there some kind of a midrash to that effect? Because we think of Matan Torah as in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. There is some kind of Matan. I mean, but part of the theme is that people got healed by, right? That's very important. People got healed during Matan Torah and things came to life. People. It goes down to a larger issue that when man sinned in the Garden of Eden, death came into the world, and the way that the Gemara speaks about it is hanachash hizil zuhama, some kind of a stain was then put upon mankind, and when they stood by Har Sinai, it got healed. Of course, what happened afterwards was that with the sin of the golden calf, then it returned. But now the significance of it, of it being healed, is known by many, many hospitals administrators, and that's why there's so many hospitals called Mount Sinai Hospital, because of the healing, which I was kidding about hospital administrators knowing this. I'm sure that 99.9% of the people have no idea why there's so many hospitals called Mount Sinai Hospital, but that's it, because of this healing taking place. So the idea, the theme of the healing taking place then is spread to the grass and the trees and everything coming alive, as it were. So therefore, the desert blooming is going to be a theme of Matan Torah as well. The Mishnah Berurah, commenting on that passage in the Shulchan Aruch, writes, "Noagin lamiri ilanot bebeit kneset," which is interesting. He's quoting ilanot bebeit kneset, "ubebatim zecher shebatzeret nidunu al peirot ha'ilan," that on Shavuot we're judged according to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. We're judged for the fruits of the tree. The Hagra bitel min hagzeh, the Gra rejected this custom, mishum she'achshav hu chok ha'amim lahamid ilanot b'chag shelahem, because now it's a custom for them to have trees on their holiday. So now it sounds very much that what the Mishnah Berurah is referring to, because we'll see the Gra in a second, what the Gra actually said, it sounds very much what the Mishnah Berurah is referring to is Christmas trees. It sounds very much what he's referring to is Christmas trees. You can ask, what does Christmas trees have to do with Chag Shavuot? It's a little bit closer to Palm Sunday, but that's what it sounds like. And again, I do want to point out, the Ramah mentioned Asavim, while the Mishnah Berurah is quoting the Magen Avraham as speaking about Ilanot, about putting trees. Now, take a look at source number three. The source number three is the Chachmat Adam. Chachmat Adam also has another book called the Chai Adam. His name was Rav Avram Danzig. He was actually a rabbi in Vilna. He was actually related by marriage to the Vilna Gaon. He actually knew the Vilna Gaon. He writes, V'yesh lomer de himlam, one second, here he's writing in Issa v'Heter in terms of the laws of Chukot Akum. He's not writing with the laws of Chag Shavuot. And I'm going to go back to the beginning of the sentence here, which for us is totally out of context, but the truth is it is our context. V'yesh lomer de himlam du mimenu, afilu hachi asar something which is not a real practice of idolatry, but it's just complete stupidity. Im kativ b'Torah mutar, if it's written in the Torah, it's allowed. Vim lo kativ af zeh asur, if it's not written in the Torah, it's not allowed. Which he just now delineated two types of problematic behaviors which will come under the rubric of chukot ha'akum, following literally pagan practices. One is, he said, the first type of pagan practice, which he said is problematic, and I'll read it again. Even if it was our practice originally, they've learned it from us, and maybe I'll have time to speak about the prototype of that, or the archetype of that. Afilo achi asur, even if they got it from us, it's not allowed. Avama she'enu chok levo dezara, something which is not a chok for their rituals. Ela lehevil v'lishtut, it's a pagan practice, but it's not part of their ritual. Im katuv b'Torah, if it's a practice which is meant in the Torah, now that's a little funny, because if it's something which is complete, has no reason, it's completely silly, but it's written in the Torah, mutar, then it would be allowed. Vim lo kativ, if it's not written in the Torah, zeh asur, because then what's the reason you're doing it? The whole reason you're doing it is because it's a pagan practice. Now, we just now jumped into this discussion in the middle of the Chachmat Adam. We'll come back to see exactly where this is coming from. He then writes, "Umitamzeh," and for this reason, "Asar hagra," the gra prohibited, "lamid ilonot b'chag haShavuot," to put trees on Shavuot, "kimo shekatfu achronim," as a number of later authorities had said to do, "kevin Shekena hagu b'chag shalahem," because that's what they did on their holidays. Now, it's interesting, the Chachmat Adam and the Mishnah Berurah use two different words. The word used by the Chachmat Adam was asar hagra. He prohibited. The word used by the Mishnah Berurah, bitel minhag, that he stopped that custom. There's a big difference between the word bitel and the word asar. And not only did the Chachmat Adam, Rabbi Danzig, say asar, he used it within the context of an example of prohibited behavior based upon this law of Chukat Akum. I have in front of me a book called Ma'aseh Rav, which is actually, it says Ma'aseh Rav HaShalem, because there are various editions of it. Over here it writes, and this is in paragraph 196.2. You'll see the significance of that in a second, instead of just 196. Bishvot ein lamid ilanot ki ma'acha she'enu ela minhag velo medina. One should not, ein lamid, should not, not asar, should not put trees up. Ki ma'acha she'enu ela minhag, because once it's only our custom, velo medina, and it's not a law, and now it's a pagan practice, v'nachon livatel. It's appropriate to cancel it, not to do this. It continues over here in a footnote or parenthetical remark that this was not in the first edition. It was in some subsequent editions. He theorizes maybe it was taken out because of censorship, maybe it really was part of the work, it was taken out and added back in. There's also the possibility that it was never there and it was added in later, but over here we have very good testimony that this is really the Gra's opinion. What's the testimony? That the Chachmat Adam, or Rabbi Danzig, actually knew him, said, no, the Gra said that this is not acceptable. Although, we do have to notice something. The Mishnah Berurah is working off of the formulation found over here. And what's the formulation? Better not to do. What's the formulation found in the Chachmat Adam? Asur, l'asot et zeh. There's a difference between the two. The reason why the Asur actually rings true is because what the Chachmat Adam quotes over here, without this example, is a very authentic application of the principle that the Gra does write in the laws of Avodah Zarah, which is really what our topic is going to be today, which means what exactly is included or not included within this. And I do want to make a comment. The first time I had seen this, I had assumed that the Gra was against the custom of putting flowers in the shul. I absolutely will say I do not believe that's the case. He's very specifically speaking about trees. He's not speaking about flowers, asavim, and other things. The reason for trees is as is stated over here, because that is now a practice. There's a possibility that if somebody sees a tree with all kinds of glitter on it, someone will look at it and say, well, that's like a Christmas tree. What's a Christmas tree doing in a shul? If you put some flowers in the shul, I find it very hard to believe that someone's going to walk in and say, well, those flowers look like a Christmas tree, which means the reason the Gra is against it, he says, because now this is a pagan practice, and it will look that the Jews are following a pagan practice. Over here, in this case, if you put flowers in your shul or in your homes, for that matter, for sure, no one's going to walk in your house and say, oh, look at that, it looks like you're keeping Christmas by having flowers in the house. So therefore, the Gra's reasoning over here is exclusively with trees. And you noted the Mishnah Berurah as well, which you have in front of you. There is a distinction between what the Rama spoke about and what the Magen Avraham spoke about. The Magen Avraham was a different custom, which means the Mishnah Berurah, even though the comment is coming on the point of the Rama, where he says not to put whatever asavim means, but then he quoted this Magen Avraham says, but there's a custom to do put trees in, specifically. Why? Because Jews are judged for fruits, specifically on Chag HaBikurim, Chag HaShavuot. So therefore, that's what he's referring to when the Gra says to cancel that minhag. Which minhag does he cancel? It's the minhag of trees, not the minhag of flowers. So any of you who were about to tell your husbands, please do not bring me flowers because I'm concerned about the... No, this, that wasn't happening. That because I'm concerned about Chukot Akum, and never buy me flowers for that reason. So you don't have to be... What? You don't have to be that concerned. That is not what the Vilna Gaon is speaking about.
The Christmas trees was relatively modern. I didn't think it was many years. Secondly, thanks to you, people decorating their sofas.
I know.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny, isn't it?
It's really weird. I mean, I used to him and I was shocked.
Okay, I don't want to hear anything about this. Every person in this room at some point has been shocked when they notice Christmas decorations in Sukkot. They sell them. My wife once asked a picture of Santa by somebody who's selling it. Who's that? They said he was a big Rav Gadol. She also was once, there was a store years ago, Vizhnitz. I don't know if it's still open. I don't know if any of you remember it. Remember Vizhnitz? So they were selling pencil cases with a picture, with a statement says, Jesus loves you. And she went over to the proprietor. She says, know what it says? He goes, okay, Mashua, love, ahavaz, it said there. She goes, no, it says, Jesus loves you. But he didn't get it. And she said, when he finally understood what it was, he turned white. He could not believe it. Yes, they often will sell things which are probably made in China by people who don't even know what they're writing and so on and so forth. And if you want to have a discussion, can you use Christmas trees as your Sukkot decorations or not? It's a very interesting topic, but we're not going to get there today. Sorry, the lights and so on, if you want, we can speak about them. The people who made them most likely are not saying l'shem kud shabrichu, I'm doing this, hareini muchen mezumen l'kai mitzvah sase shel avodas kochavim. Most likely they're not creating this for idolatry, they're creating this because they want to sell lights, and it could be the person who ordered it has something in mind, but it's a little difficult to argue that by definition, these lights that are used as Christmas lights in certain places, the people in China making them, very hard for me to believe that they're actually doing it, you know, with the kavana to create idolatry. That's a bigger problem. Okay. Yeah, that's a much larger problem. Let's take a look at source number 4 now. The Rambam is going to give us a larger definition of what exactly is the problem of Chukotechem Lo Telech, which, by the way, is a verse in the Torah. There's a couple different verses in Vayikra, in the 18th chapter, the 20th chapter. There's two different times. Let's look and see what the Rambam says. Ein holkin b'chukat ha'vdei kochavim. One should not follow practices of idolaters. Now, it's interesting, he uses the word idolater specifically. V'lo medamim lahem. One should not be like them, lo bi malbush, not in terms of dress, lo bi se'ar, and not in terms of hair, ukiyotzi behem, shenemru v'lo techu b'chukotogayim, don't follow the practices of the non-Jews, v'nemar b'chukotayim lo telechu, and it says don't follow their customs. I'll translate chukotayim soon as we go on. V'nemar, hishamer lecha pin tinakesh achareim, and furthermore it says be careful not to follow after them. Hakol b'inyan echad, all this leads to one particular direction, or matter, whom as here shelo yidamelahem, the Torah orders us not to be like them. Eliyah Yisrael muvdal mehem, the Jews should be separate. V'yadua b'malbusho uvishar ma'asav, a Jew should be discernible in terms of their dress and all of their actions. Kemosha muvdal mehem b'mado uvdeotav, the same way that he's different in terms of his, it's really his beliefs and his thoughts and beliefs. Which means the Rambam over here starts off talking about idolaters, but leads on to say Jews should be different from non-Jews. Because he says, Eliyah HaYisrael muvdal mehem, Jews should be separated, which means there should be, according to the Rambam, some real distinct Jewish dress. V'cheinu omer v'adil tchem min ha'amim, and also, and similar says, I will make you different from the other nations. Lo yubash b'malbush ha'myuchad lahem, don't wear clothing which is unique for them. V'lo yigdal tzitzit rosho, don't grow your hair, k'mo tzitzit rosham, the way they grow their hair. V'lo yigalach me'etzdadin v'yaniach asar be'emtza, don't have a mohawk. K'mo shehein osin v'zen nikra bularit, and that is what's referred to in the Gemara as bularit. V'lo yigalach ha'se'ar mi'keneged panav me'ozen la'ozen v'yaniach Ha-paramila acharav, kederach shosin lahem, and he gives all kinds of pagan haircuts. V'lo yivne mekamot kibinyan heichalot shel akum, and don't build your places like their places of worship. Kedei shikansu behen rabim, kimo shein osim, in order to have lots of people coming like this, which means here he just now went to architecture, that don't go building the shul in the fashion that they build their places of worship. V'kol ha'os, v'kol. No, architecture. He's talking about architecture. V'kol ha'oseh echad mi'elu u'kiyotze behem loka. Anybody who does any of these things receives malkot, which means, according to the Rambam, all of these things he just now enumerated is breaking a Torah law, which means Rambam includes going from Jewish dress to non-Jewish dress. Okay, so let's stop there for a moment. In source number 5, the Hagahot Mamoniot, and in case you have forgotten what the Hagahot Mamoniot is, it is a digest on the Rambam, which more often than not will tell us what Ashkenazic practices or what the Balei HaTosfot believed, and especially where it's different. Over here, the Hagahot Mamoniot, source number 5, writes, Katav Haraim She'ein Lahosif Misvara, that one should not use, based upon logic, Al mashe manu chachamim shaita kabbalah biyadam shemuchukot ha'ovdei kochavim. One should not add to what the rabbis enumerated as the things which are problematic, as that these things specifically are following pagan practice. Now, we will see exactly what he's referring to, and then it will become clearer. In source number 6, we just so happen to have the Ra'im, which the book that he wrote is the Sefer Yireim. It is a list of mitzvot. Again, from more or less what we would call the Tosafot school. Lo ta'asu kima'aseim uvukoteim lo te'lechu, v'yir'eit milokech, v'lo te'lech b'chukot ha'gayim, v'lo ta'ase kima'aseim shel shiva umot. If you were to actually open the Chumash, you will find something interesting. In context, the prohibition is talking about when you enter the land of Israel, don't follow the pagan practices of the seven nations that are there. And similarly, don't follow the pagan practices of the Egyptians of the country they just now left from, which then leaves the door open. Is this prohibition, based upon the verse itself, exclusively dealing with the seven nations or and Egypt, or is it all idolatry? So the Yireim makes it sound like it's the seven nations. And he says, Ve'ilu ha-mishpatim, ve'vicha elo mori, ve'chtiv batre, ve'lo tase kemaseim, ve'chtiv v'pasha achremot, kemasei eretz Yisrael, asher yashavtem ba, lo tasu, u'kemasei eretz Kanaan, asher ani mevi'etchem shama. Which means, it sounds that it's limited to these places. Lo tasu, u'vichoktem lo telechu, piresh, afilu. Now he's going to go into what is it that you can't do. So he just now limited this greatly. It doesn't mean, I mean the, I forgot who said it, but I heard that what is proper Jewish dress, whatever they wear in Paris, that's what you shouldn't wear, right? Some place in Mei Sha'arim, I heard that's Jewish dress. Whatever they do in Paris, so Jews do the opposite because Paris is non-Jewish dress. Now the fact that half the designers may very well be Jewish, does that have any impact on this? But over here he's saying, who cares about Paris? Paris is not the issue. The Uraim. You don't go to Paris for your spring shopping?
I'm just saying, many of the Haredi women wear the most fashionable.
You call that fashionable? What you wear is fashionable. Anyway.
So very good anti-Semitic fashion designers in Paris.
Yes, there are. Trained in England. Okay. Raised and trained in England, right? So, the Uraim really sounds somewhat different from the Rambam. The Rambam makes his broad thing, Jews, be different from non-Jews. The Uraim is saying the seven nations, and now he's going to define what exactly it is. Again, back where it's underlined. Lo tasu b'chukoteim, lo tasu v'chukoteim lo teleichu pirish. What does this mean? Afilo einam of ovdot ele ma'aseim v'chukoteim shehur gulu la'asot l'shem Torah shelahem hizira Torah aleihem. Anything which is part of their practice, the Torah warned not to do. V'chachamim pirshu mahamaseim v'chukim shehurgulu la'asot l'shem Torah shelahem. And the Gemara, the rabbis in the Gemara, gave a list of what those practices are. And now what he's saying is that even if it doesn't have to be an idolatrous practice, it doesn't have to be an idolatrous ritual, but the things which are problematic are listed in the Gemara in Shabbat. At one point, I copied this for you, but I decided that it will take us too far afield if we read the list. All of the things that are listed over there are what you would call some kind of magical incantations or so on. If you want your food to cook properly, then it says you should urinate in front of the pot. Okay, that's one of them. Just to give you an indication. Now, if somebody can prove scientifically that there's some kind of a correlation there, then that may change this or impact this. I'm just giving you that is actually an example which is brought down over there. Which is why we would not go to your Seven Nations restaurant, right? Okay. Uvitosefta de Shabbat, also in the Tosefta there's a list there in the seventh chapter. Moneh kol ma she'ta kabbalah biyad chachamim shayu b'chokoteihim. The rabbis have a list of what the pagans used to do. Which pagans? The seven nations. It is a list of what the seven nations did, and that's what you can do, which means he's being very specific of what the Torah prohibition is over here. And then he adds, and this is what you had gathered from Hagot Mamoniot, ve'ein lahosif aleihem, and do not add to this list. Ve'einam misfara ki'im mikabbalah. These things are not based upon our logic and the things that we think. No, this is based upon tradition, which means he's saying we have a tradition of the things that are not to be done, and that list cannot be added to. Okay? So you have a real big difference between the approach of the Rambam versus the approach of the Uraim.
So this is a list of things that they did for their idolatrous,
they're idolatrous and they're superstitious. I'll come to that. And they're superstitious behavior. If we'll continue in the Uraim, sorry, don't turn the page yet. If we'll continue, v'kasher izira katuv ma'aseh sheva ha'umot v'chukoteihem, and here he says specifically, when it tells us about the seven nations, kach izira ma'aseh Mitzrayim v'chukoteihem, it's also Egypt, rehuk shu zeh lezeh, because they're connected, d'chtiv, k'maseh eretz Mitzrayim lo tasu, k'maseh eretz Kanaan. Right, and we're given a list over there. Turn the page to page 2. In the fourth line, he starts the beginning by quoting the verse, "B'chotem lo tilechu v'hochi matnitan," and we were taught b'sifri. The sifri is the Torah Kohanim. It's the Midrash Halacha on Vayikra. There's two types of Midrashim. There's a Midrash, which is Midrash Agadah, which tells stories, which we're more familiar with when somebody says we're going to study Midrash. There's also something called Midrash Halacha, which gives legal opinions. The Midrash Halacha on Vayikra, right, is the Sifri. V'hochim atnitim b'sifri. We learned in the Sifri. K'masai Eretz Mitzrayim, when it says that you can't follow the practice of Egypt, yochol lo yit'u nitiyot. Maybe we can't plant trees, because they plant trees. V'lo yivnu binyanim. We can't build houses, because they build houses. Right? Kimotam. Because that's what they do. Right? Talmud lo mar uv'chukotehem lo telechu. Lo amarti ela b'chukim. Now, let's go back a second. What is a chok? A chok is something that we don't understand the logic. We do it not because we understand the logic. Here, an example of a chok is that you can't wear shatnez. We're walking through a store, if it says 50% wool and 50% linen, it's 100% shatnez, and you don't buy that article of clothing. Is it because it makes sense? It's logical? No. It's a chok. We follow it even though we don't know the reason. Laws of Kashrut and others, other chukim. Which means, he says over here, hold on, maybe I can't plant trees, because they non-Jews plant trees, I can't do pagan practices. Pagans plant trees. Maybe I can't build buildings. And now you can say, maybe I can't use a microwave, maybe, and then it goes to all kinds of, non-Jews do many, many things in this world. Maybe. So what he's saying over here is no. He's being very, again, this is a very insightful comment. He's saying, what was the word that the Torah used that said that you cannot do? V'chuko tehem lo telechu. What's a chok? We have chok and we have mishpat. Mishpat is something which is logical. A chok is something which isn't logical. So therefore he's saying, v'chuko tehem lo telechu. So therefore maybe I would think I can't plant trees, I can't build houses like they do. No, that's not a chok. I mean, those things which are logical. Which means I haven't yet seen... Style gets the, yeah, stupid looking styles are interesting, but you can say, no, I like it, it's attractive. By the way, among the things, there's almost an unlimited list of things that have been brought up in Jewish history as a possible issue of a prohibition of chukotem lo telechu. I found a discussion on if you're able to bring a body to a cemetery in a wagon. They said, Jews never did such a thing. Only the non-Jews used the wagon. And the response is, well, we didn't have wagons, and now we have wagons. Like again, you can now say the same thing. Some say, hold on, maybe Jews shouldn't use a hearse. A hearse is used by non-Jews. Well, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be allowed to drive a car at all. He says, no, something which makes sense. Driving, anything, again, anything which makes sense, it... Okay.
And we don't do that. Okay, good.
So we don't use flowers. And by the way, when I started the topic, the first thing that I did was I was going to speak about flowers by funerals. Because I Googled that just to take a look, and I found website after website or website into these Ask the Rabbi things, and all of them saying the same thing that my mother said, we don't do this. Right? We Jews don't do it. Now, I happen to know a little secret about this that maybe nobody else here knows, and that is the Gemara says that we bring flowers to a funeral.
That you didn't know.
So as much as we can say, well, it's not a Jewish practice, the Gemara thought it was a Jewish practice. Okay, so I know. I know it's one of the things that we knew, but maybe we didn't know. So, we all know that we shouldn't. Listen to me carefully. We all know, and you ask any religious Jew, they get uncomfortable when they see somebody bring flowers to a funeral and put it by the grave, and they all say, oh, that's a pagan practice and whatever. I remember I was by a funeral, unfortunately, and it was probably, must have been pretty close to whenever I covered that Gemara, and it's more than one Gemara, and I'd seen it in Daf Yomi, and it was very, very clear that the Gemara is saying this is something that was done in the time of the Gemara, and I'll tell you the reason for it, because you can, and you won't like the reason for it. The reason they brought flowers was because of the smell.
So then you have to bring fragrant flowers.
They brought, exactly, they brought fragrant flowers. That was the reason, and I'll tell you another thing, that's the reason why a bride would also carry flowers, but we don't, I mean, in the Middle Ages, people didn't bathe. Bathe, deal with it. People didn't bathe. And if you didn't want the groom to run away, you better had fragrant flowers over there. So I'm saying the use of flowers had actually it wasn't some kind of pagan practice with had no logical reason. It had a great deal of reason. And if you're going to be honest, that you can go to a funeral and there could be some kind of a smell as well. And that is true today. This is not a practice which is based upon no Jewish source whatsoever. Even though you find plenty of rabbis who, for whatever reason, have missed this Gemara. I have no explanation for it whatsoever. They missed this Gemara. They missed this Gemara because here's a practice that the Gemara brings down is a Jewish practice. If one of the sources that we have over here, which believe me, I cut down incredibly significantly, is source 20, which is a question of asked to Rav Avadya Yosef, Nishalti, Imutar Lotet Zer Prachim Arono Shomet. I was asked, are you allowed to put flowers on a grave, on a coffin? O Yesh Bizem Mishum Bichukotem Lotelechu. Or is this following pagan practices because the nations of the world do this? I'm not reading his answer right now, but I'm just showing you that if you behave, which I know is quite difficult for you, then perhaps we'll get to that. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Let's get back.
Don't go to those shuls.
Okay, that's a very interesting point. Let's continue now. We saw the Rambam had that consideration. What would the Uraim say about that? The Uraim would say something which is a chok, something which is built in a really stupid way. But if something is built because the sound carries or you can have more people in it, would the Uraim come and say that that would be... No, he said, let's look in the Gemara. Is that one of the things listed? It's not listed. It's not a problem. Okay, so hold on a second. There was just something that I at least wanted you to see here. After he quotes the Sifri, we're back on page 2 on the top. By the way, at the rate that you're going, we're going to be doing this in 2 weeks. We're not going to do anything else. You look at the Sifri, he quotes, and he says, "Kamasei Eretz Mitzrayim, locho lo yutu netiyot, v'lo yivnu binyanim, kimotam, talmud lomar, uvichukoteim lo telechu. Lo amarti ela bichukim hachakukim lahem ula'avoteihim. Only things which are a chok, things which are illogical, which they do or their ancestors did. Mahayu osim." And now he gives you a list. This is not his list, which he's making up. This is from the Sifri, which is terribly politically incorrect, so I'm sorry for bringing this. I'll be accused of homophobia in a second. Ish nosea ish, for example, a man marrying a man, v'isha nosei isha, or a woman marrying a woman, or isha nosei l'shnayim, a woman marrying two different people, v'ish nosei isha ubita, v'kach l'neber uvechukoteihim lo telechem. So it's very interesting that got thrown in over here for as a on top of everything else. So the next time somebody says, well, what's the problem of homosexual couples? You can say, b'chukoteim lo telechu. They'll say, what are you talking about? But that's actually the example. Why? Because it says not to follow the practices of Egypt. And Egypt had the reputation of being the most corrupt place morally in terms of its sexual mores. So that's why that got tacked in over here. So it's interesting, because the Uraim on the one hand was what I would call, he was very permissive in terms of two issues. What were the two issues? One is he limited it to the practices of the seven nations. Two, by limiting that, the extension, it's really the second thing, but the extension of that is, it's only the things that they did then, and nothing could be tacked onto it or added to this, which means this is a fixed list. The fixed list is found in the Gemara. Don't go bothering me about architecture, and don't bother me about any kinds of other things. This is very limited. Now, you hopefully will realize at this point that there is a world of difference between the approach of the Rambam and the approach of the Uraim. Okay? One is in Ashkenaz, one is in Sfarad. Let's now look at Rabbeinu Nissim, source number 7. who's in Spain, who goes towards the Sephardic side here. He's commenting on a Gemara, which we may have to actually pay attention to at some point. The Gemara is Sorfim al Hamilachim Velomi Darke Emori. The Gemara tells us that when a king dies, you are permitted to burn all of the king's linens and possessions and so on. Now, that is a pagan practice. The Gemara over here says, but you're allowed to do it anyway. Why are you allowed to do it anyway? That's the question. There's actually two different Gemaras that speak about it. One Gemara leaves us to the point, you're allowed to do it because it makes sense. And why does it make sense? Because no one else is allowed to use the king's things. So if no one can use the king's things, so then how do you protect anybody from using it? So then you get rid of the king's things. On the other hand, there's Gemara that's Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin adds another issue, and it says, oh, it's also mentioned in Scripture. It's not in the Chumash, it's mentioned in Navi, where they actually burned something from a king, so therefore it's not exclusively a pagan practice, because we find that Jews did it as well. Although you can argue that there were pagan kings long before there were Jewish kings, nonetheless, the Gemara there does say, oh, but it's mentioned in Scripture as well. So, the Gemara says, and he's quoting on the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, that you're allowed to burn the things of the kings. Ein amidarkei amori, this is not considered to be following the pagan practice. Ein amidarkei amori, lachush lelo ta'asei, kema'aseihem, lefi shelo asra Torah, ele chukot shel avodat kochavim. The only thing that they didn't allow was something which is a chok. What's a chok? Something which doesn't make any logical sense. Eil dvarim shel hevel ubatala. Things which are, as I said, if you want to speed up your cooking process and so on, those things that make no logical sense whatsoever. The kulan yesh behem tzorach avodah kochavim, and they're part of the pagan ritual. Aval dvarim shel ta'am sharu. Things which make logical sense are allowed. Which means the Ran over here just, cut through the whole topic and just very, very simple. Something which is a pagan ritual, which is illogical, it's a chok, again, very close to the verse. A pagan ritual which is illogical, that you can't do. Something which pagans do, but there is a logic to it. So for example, is there a logic to bringing a body to a cemetery in a wagon carried by a horse instead of people carrying it? Yeah, there's a logic. Is there a logic for that matter of putting in a car? Yes, there's a logic to it. So once that's going to be the case, then according to the Ran, it doesn't finish the carry. Now, the Ran did not say the same thing as the Urayim. The Urayim said you have a fixed list. The fixed list can't be added to. The Ran is saying over here, pagan practices are not allowed, but pagan illogical practice is not allowed. If it's a logical practice, then it's not included in the list. That's the position of the Ran. So once again, we have a huge difference between the various Rishonim here, from the Rambam to the Ran, the Urayim, and here we're about to be introduced to the most important source, which will be quoted later on. It's also cut down, and I gave you a little bit of it, not in its entirety. It's known as the Maharik. It is the Shelet and Tshuvot, the responsa of the Maharik. The Maharik was actually posed a question as follows: is a doctor in a hospital, in a clinic, allowed to wear a doctor's robe?
When did he write?
Around 500 years ago.
Is it? They had doctor's robes 500 years ago.
Quite clearly. So is a doctor allowed to wear... No. Is a doctor allowed to wear a doctor's type of robe? Because... What?
The green suit.
But he's really talking about, I think, almost like a cape, almost like a robe or something, which is a very specific garment, let's go back a second. Jews didn't wear these things. I'm not going to now say that pagans wore them, but non-Jewish doctors wore them. So now a Jewish doctor who's about to, take up his position poses the question, am I allowed to wear this, which the non-Jewish doctors wear? So now, am I now using non-Jewish clothing, or am I putting on doctor's clothing? That's really the question. And you can extend this question to a judge or to other kinds, meaning where there's a... What?
Rabbinical, where
there's a particular uniform involved. Over here, it's Jews don't wear it, but it's not following some kind of illogical pagan you know, ritual that you know that there is a certain logic. And what's the logic? So let's take a look. The Maharik writes over here, Laniyata Ati, up from the top, nearer to Devar Pashut, it seems obvious to me, Dulo La Asur Mishum Chok, you're not allowed to disallow, you don't disallow, Ela Be'achad Mishnei Chalakim, there's only one of two criteria. So he gives us two different criteria. Ha'echad, Hu Adavar She'in Ta'amo Nigla, Kidamashma Lashon Chok. Something where it makes no sense. Where it makes no sense, then it's a chok. Ukitapirish Rashi, as Rashi explained in the Chumash, what is a chok? Gzeirat HaMelech, she'in lehem tam l'davar. Which means the Rashi tells us in the Chumash, the word chok means something which makes no sense. And the Ramban as well, a chok is something where there's no reason, where there's no utility to it, at least on an obvious level. The Inyana Sheni, which means, by the way, the reverse is true, that if there is a reason for it, which now you realize it's very, very close to what the Ran said, if there is a reason for it, so then it should be allowed. V'nyana sheni yesh la'asur mishum chukot goyim l'fi ha'niskar l'niyata ati, hu ha'davar sher shayach bo nidnud pritzut geder hatzniut v'anava yinhagu bo goyim gam ze asur. He just threw a second thing in, that if non-Jewish clothing, there's a problem of pritzut, then he also thinks that there is a problem. And he... Right. In the middle, we have one line which is underlined, taken totally out of context. Of gam zot nirad dahainu dafka kishu oseh kidei lihidamot aleihim. If a person does it because he wants to look like a non-Jew, v'lo l'to'elet yidua, but not for some kind of utility. Not kind of known reason for it, Kedemash Malashin, and so on. Let's get to his conclusion at the end, where it's underlined, V'koshkein b'levishat hakapa, that is the robe that he is dealing with over here, She'in isur b'davar, there's no prohibition, U'pshita d'lo damil otan hashnuyim b'tosefta, that this is not like the various things mentioned in the Tosefta, all these pagan magical things, Shreitam levishata yidua. There's a reason he's wearing it. Why? B'siman hayotam mimasigim b'chokhma, to show that this person has a degree, to know who the doctor is. It's a very simple point. Hahi ve'ein letzlot levishata ki imuto elet, and therefore there's a purpose in it. Had a mishach menu hein machmat hakavod hein machmat revach mamon. He says there's purpose in this. What's the purpose? People will know that you're the doctor. So what are they going to do with you? They'll give you more honor. That's a good purpose. What else is the reason for it? You're going to make some money, which means over here, I mean, the Maharik gets real, real practical over here. What bothers him? It bothers him if the clothing you're going to wear, which means if you'll tell me that if you wear the clothing of a Playboy bunny, you'll make more money, he doesn't like that so much. Why? Because that goes into the... I'm sorry, for all of you who just had a career, you know, destroyed. He says that's a problem in terms of the pritzut problem. But in terms of the issue of dressing as non-Jews, he says that's only if you're doing it because you want to be seen as a non-Jew. You want to be seen as a doctor or a lawyer who has to wear robes in certain places, right? Or a judge has to wear robes. Anything where there's a uniform, and you're doing it because you will get treated in a particular way by wearing this. And he says, you saw it, black and white. You'll get kavod. And what was the other thing that you'll get?
Money.
You'll get money. He says, oh, that's a good... You're not doing it to look like a non-Jew. You're doing it to make a buck. And that, according to the Maharik, is an old Jewish practice. Yes? No, that he was saying the opposite was true. He was saying is that when there is a lack of pritzut and a lack of anavah is a problem. Over here, it's not a question of lack of anavah. He's saying it that if you study to be a doctor and you're a doctor now, you're allowed to put on a doctor's robe when you walk around where sick people will know that you're the doctor and they'll pay you your money and they'll treat you with respect rather than thinking that you're not a doctor. Again, he says, and therefore there's no prohibition in such a case. Uman de kaivle keva lizol levate, and somebody who has pain is going to go over to him. Uvakai gavna lo shayich la asur me'achasher devar muchach she'in mitkaven lahadmot aleihem. He's not doing it to dress up as a non-Jew. Vegam heim lo in higuzot el lechvod ulutoelad. It's not a question of pritzut. It's l'kavod. If there's kavod, if there's for honor, there's a purpose. If there's a purpose, it's allowed. And therefore, the Maharik... Now, you tell me right now. How would the Rambam feel about the Maharik's position here? It's not black and white. It really isn't black and white. Which means, could the Rambam, even as a physician, put on special doctor's clothing? Meaning he says not to dress as non-Jews. The Maharik really cuts through the various opinions, and it's not so simple to argue, right? It's not so simple to argue with the Maharik because he didn't take on the Rambam directly. He just went and said that anything that has a purpose to it is not... Meaning, what's the prohibition? What he's doing is he's bringing the prohibition really into focus. And he's saying the prohibition is to try to pass yourself off as a non-Jew. To pass yourself off as a doctor is fine. Okay?
That's the negative side. What the Rambam says is the opposite. He says you mustn't try to be like them.
Correct. Correct. Correct.
A different side of the same argument.
And after the individual has to take their kippah off to work to get kavod and money.
Correct. At the very end, I have a tshuva from Rav Menashe Klein that will deal with that point. Let's leave it for right now. And let's go on. The Me'iri in Source 9, we're going to skip.
One question.
Yeah.
By that token, if you take it strictly, you shouldn't follow any of the fashion trends of the modern world because you might look like them.
Okay, so hold on to that. And don't buy any clothing between now and 2 weeks from now. But I will get. I'm just kidding. I will get back to that point. We'll skip the Meiri in source number 9. He mentions he believes there's two different levels of the prohibition. There's a Torah level and a rabbinic level. Number 10, we have the Sefer Hachinuch. He thinks it's following any idolaters. With him, it's not all non-Jews. He limits to idolaters, which means while the Rambam has all non-Jews, he has idolaters, and as you saw, which means there's really three levels over here. There was the Uraim, who says it's the seven nations, right? You have the Chinuch, who's saying it's all idolaters. You have then the Rambam, who says it's all non-Jews. Again, big difference between those different approaches, so there you have the Chinuch in source number 10. Source 11, we have the Beit Yosef. Beit Yosef happens to also go by the name of Rav Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, the Maran, the Shulchan Aruch. The Beit Yosef is his longer discussion. In his longer discussion, he writes, Asur l'lachit b'chulkot agoyim, ve'in tzarech lo mashalo l'ksom, right, magic and so on, ela afilu minhag shenagu isur l'lech, and so on. Quotes the Sifri. Now, this is a cut off from a much larger discussion. He quotes the Rambam, v'chein katov Rambam, enol chim b'chulkot agoyim, v'lo medim lehem, od ad sof ha-siman, right? Which means the Torah had quoted the Rambam, so he's identifying the source. He then introduces to the discussion somebody who you'll recognize, the Katav Mahari Kolin. Who's the Mahari Kolin? The Maharik, right? Shut Maharik. And he quotes, and the Ein Lasur Mishum Chok, Ela Bechad Bishnei Chalakim, Achad Hu, and he quotes the Maharik. And we're not going to read it because he quotes it pretty much as you have already seen it. But what's very significant is he quotes it, and it sounds very much that he brings this in, la halacha. When we get to and now in source number 12, we have the Darkei Moshe. The Darkei Moshe is a book that you may or may not be familiar with. It's the comment of Rav Moshe Iserlish on the Torah, which means both the Beit Yosef, that's just generally, it's interesting. The Torah wrote a book which is the order of Jewish law, breaking things into four different sections of practical law that exists today, Arachayim, Yeridei, Choshe Mishpat, Evin Ezer, right? The Torah made that order. The Beit Yosef wrote a commentary on it, trying to locate the sources for it. The Darkei Moshe wrote the same book at the same time in a different part of the world, writing the sources of it. It was a little sad being Rav Moshe Iserlish, because he writes the book, and then the Beit Yosef beats him to print. He buys the next copy of the Torah, and he finds the Beit Yosef is ready there. He then shortens his work, which is called the Darkei Moshe HaKatzar, which is what we have over here, but there's two. The Darkei Moshe HaArach, which is the original one, and HaKatzar, which he thought would be better you know, in terms of sales. I'm pretty sure he did it. It's possible the publishers did it. Publishers did things like that. But I'm pretty sure he did this himself. He then, by the way, said, okay, I'm now going to write another book, just the bottom line, what the halacha is. And guess what? Rav Yosef Karo beat him to that as well. They two times in a row, they wrote the same book in different parts of the world. And then when he got his hands on the Shulchan Aruch, instead of working on his own Shulchan Aruch, whatever he would have called it, he instead added his notes to the Shulchan Aruch. And when those two got published together, that's the Shulchan Aruch that we have today. But this is his longer discussion, but now you realize this is his shorter, longer discussion, right? Darkei Moshe HaKatzar. He writes, V'katav Haran. So what's the first thing that you now know, what he just now brought into the discussion? The Torah quotes the Rambam. What does he now say? Well, the Ran says, "D'lo asra Torah elachok avodah zarah odvarim shel hevel ubatala ukulan yesh bem tzarech avodah zarah odvarim shel tam shari." So right away he brings the Ran into it. So what does the Ran do? The Ran goes, and again, it's very different from the Rambam. The Rambam says you can't be like non-Jews. It's a non-Jewish practice. You can't build your houses of worship like theirs. And he says, no, anything which makes sense is allowed. So now you realize that this huge difference between the Rambam and the Ran is going to be highlighted by the Rama. He then goes in and he quotes the Maharik, right? Anything that doesn't make sense. And we notice that there is definitely a certain connection between the Ran's approach and the Maharik's approach. Bottom two lines of the page. Ulekach haminhag shenhigu ha'umot shekol echad shehu na'aseh mumche berufuot. Bitchila lovesh malbush kimin kapa ein isur lisrael dere tam levishata yudua lisiman hayato mimisigei chachmahi, that pretty much exactly word for word that you had seen in the Maharik, that this is allowed. Anything which makes sense is going to be allowed. Look at the last two lines. But he rich b'tshuva, and he goes on to the tshuva and says, "Masha the kol isur enu asur elikushu osek kidei lihidamot aleihem biloto elat acheret avaydei to elat shari," which means the only time you'll have a prohibition is if you're doing this on purpose because you want to look like a non-Jew, you want to pass yourself as a non-Jew. If there's any other to elat in it, any other thing to be gained from it, so then that will be allowed. Let's go now to the Shulchan Aruch. Source number 13. The Mechaber writes, "Shelo levosh kemalbushei avud." That's the kotaret, the headline. Not to wear clothing of non-Jews. Ein hochin b'chukato avdei kochavim, v'lo midamim lahem. Right from the Torah, from the Rambam. V'lo yibash malbusham yuchad lahem. Don't wear clothing which is specifically great non-Jewish clothing. V'lo yigadel tzitzit rosho. And now you'll notice he's quoting the Rambam. And he goes into the various styles. Which is very interesting, because while in the Beit Yosef, he brought in the Maharik, over here in the Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't. And it sounded like he was enthusiastically quoting the Maharik, so it's still interesting that he does not quote it over here. The Rama adds, Haga, Jews should be different from non-Jews in terms of their actions and their behavior. What is the problem? It's only a problem if non-Jews wear particular types of garments because of pritzut. Like non, here's where the red comes into it. For example, if they wear something which is red, v'humabush sarim, which, by the way, is talking about men, not women. Because he says that that's the way that that's the way that some of their leaders would dress. Mabush hapritzut. O b'divar shenagulim and hagul l'chok ve'ein tam b'divar, or something which they do where there's no reason. The ikal meichlish mishum darkei amori, because that could be a problem. Darkei amori v'sheish bo shemitz avod kachavim me'avoteyim. Aval davar shenagula toelet, anything which you do, there's a reason for it. Kagon shadar kancho, kol misha hu rofei mumcha yesh lo mabush miyuchad, shenikar bo shehu rofei uman. Or for example, if doctors wear clothing, because it's doctor's clothing, mutar lo bosho, you're allowed to wear it, and you know where he got that from. V'chein sheosim mishum kavod, o tam acher, or if you do it for honor or another reason, what was the tam acher?
Oh,
money. But that was just an example. He says, when there's a reason for it, it's allowed. Because again, what's not allowed? A chok is not allowed. If there's a reason, then it's not a chok. V'chein amru, and therefore sofrim ala malachim ve'ein bo mishum darkei mori. And therefore you're allowed to burn the clothing of the king, the things of the king, and it's not darkei mori. So now you see that the Ran, so what did the Ramah do? The Ramah, and you saw there in the Darkei Moshe, he quoted the Ran, he quoted the Maharik. His approach over here is the only things which are not allowed are things which are done for no reason whatsoever, or they're done for total pritzut, for, how would you translate pritzut? Immodest intentions, provocative intentions, but anything which is done for a proper reason is going to be allowed. On this, the Gra in source number 15 argues. Now, instead of reading the whole thing, I will tell you what the Gra says. First of all, I want you to see his conclusion. His conclusion, the last line, is Aval divrei haran tmu'im ma'od v'chein divrei harav. He has a problem with the Ran, and he's a problem with the Rama. He says, I don't know where they're getting this from. You know where they're getting it from. They're getting it from the Maharik, they're getting it from the Ran. What bothers the Gra is the following. It goes back to the Gemara, where there were two different Gemaras. There was the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and there was the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And both of them dealt with the question of burning the clothing of the king. And one of them gives, basically, it sounds like it's something which makes sense. And if it makes sense, so then it's fine. It's not doing it as a chok, it's doing it makes sense. The other one said, no, he quoted a verse. It said, no, this is Jewish practice. The Gra therefore concludes that the Gemara that quotes the verse is the authentic Gemara. By the way, that's not simple. And I'll tell you why it's not simple. Because the Gemara is mentioned in two places, Sanhedrin and Avodah Zarah. Where do you think is the main place they're discussing Avodah Zarah? In Avodah Zarah. What do you think they're talking Sanhedrin? Sanhedrin is really a side point where they're talking about how to execute, which type of mode of execution is allowed, and it gets into discussion, well, the non-Jews kill like this, and we let it kill like the non-Jews do, and this is considered to be a pagan practice. Not a pagan practice, but it says, no, there's a reason for it, and then it gets into discussion with the clothing, and then it quotes the verse. It says, oh, no, this is the reason why the thing with the clothing, with burning the clothing, because it quotes the verse. So there are Rishonim who already say, the main Gemara here is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. That's the main source over here, and the other one is really a side point. The Vilna Gaon takes the approach of the Gemara in Sanhedrin as the main source. He therefore sticks with this necessity for a practice to be allowed that has to be written in the Torah. So therefore, he'll end up with a very extreme position, and this is it, that if something is a pagan practice, which means part of their idolatrous practices, it's not allowed any condition. Pagan idolatrous practices are never allowed. Non-Jewish practices, according to him, are not allowed unless they're written in the Torah. So now, that's pretty much where the Gra goes. Now, we could read through the whole thing. This is why, when the Chachmat Adam quoted the Gra regarding the trees in Shul, he said, okay, this is a pagan practice. Again, it's a pagan practice, because he understands Christianity as pagan. They have their Christmas trees, and therefore he used the word asur, because that's the way, because he's understanding it within the context of this comment of the Gra over here. On the other hand, the Gra didn't say that, as far as we know, based on the Ma'aser Rav, because the Ma'aser Rav said the Gra bitel at haminhag, said this is better off not doing, because it could be that according to the Gra, if something makes sense, but non-Jews do it, you're still not allowed to do it unless it's written in Scripture. Now, the question on the Gra is going to be the Sifri that we saw. What about planting trees and whatever? You know, there's all kinds of other things that non-Jews do, which means where do you draw the line? And apparently, what we see over here is, I'll tell you exactly where the Gra will draw the line. If it has become part of non-Jewish religious practice, that's exactly where you would draw the line. But it's still very interesting to me that the Mishnah Berurah's, you know, understanding, which is based upon the Ma'aser Rav, and he obviously ignored the Chayyadim, or that book is called the Chachmat Adam, he obviously ignored that, and he did not write that it's prohibited, and he rather wrote that this is something which is better off not doing. That would seem to make a big difference over here. So I just want to conclude, at least for today. There's lots of examples that we can still come back to. Again, maybe primarily in terms of dress, and there is a lot more to say. Rav Avadya's tshuva, we still want to see. We have a tshuva from Moshe that we want to see. We'll leave that for next time. But just to be very, very clear, the Vilna Gaon did not speak about the custom of flowers in shul. Flowers in shul and flowers in the house have nothing to do with this discussion. It is not part of Christian ritual to bring flowers into the churches or into the homes. It is part of Christian sensibility, and I would go so far as say ritual, to have a Christmas tree. I don't know if it's a mitzvah, not a mitzvah. It doesn't make a difference how old it is. It's something which they do. So that's where the sensitivity is. And it's only upon the comment of the Magen Avraham that we find the Mishnah Berurah attaching it, even though according to the Chayodim, it sounded a little bit broader, but still he talked about ilanot. He talked about trees. As I said, I've seen people quote this Vilna Gaon as an objection to having flowers and the custom of having flowers. That is not the case. That is not what he's talking about. So, for Chag Shavuot, you can buy your flowers, you can put flowers in the shul, you can do what you want with your flowers.
What? Bishops wear kippot as part of their ritual. That's ritual.
To be continued. Oh, see that? Not all trees are kosher for Christmas trees. Okay. The question is bidyeved what you can use as a Christmas tree.